Welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast for November 26th, 2013. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and today I'm talking to Taku Kambayashi and Gary Koretsky about two related kinases that control T-cell development. During an immune response, T-cells are spurred into action when their T-cell receptor binds to an antigen, which is a little piece of a protein from a pathogen that's displayed for the T-cell by an antigen-presenting cell. T-cell receptor stimulation activates the T-cell, causing it to undergo differentiation and proliferation so that it can help eradicate the pathogen. T-cell receptor stimulation causes the generation of second messengers like diacylglycerol, which subsequently activate other signaling pathways to ultimately control the response of the T-cell. These signaling pathways are very sensitive to the amount of diacylglycerol, or DAG, that's generated, so precise control over its generation and degradation is important. DAG is generated by the activity of an enzyme called PLC-gamma, and it's inactivated by diacylglycerol kinases, or DGKs. In a new study published in this issue of Science Signaling, Kambayashi and Koretsky have collaborated on a project looking at the different roles of two DGKs in T-cell development. A companion paper from Kambayashi's group explores the importance of one of these enzymes in the development of natural regulatory T-cells. Kambayashi and Koretsky collaborated at the Perelman School of Medicine at the University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia. Koretsky has since relocated to Weill Medical College at Cornell University. Welcome, Dr. Kambayashi, Dr. Koretsky.
Hello, this is Taku Kambayashi.
Thank you very much. This is Gary Koretsky.
In one of these studies published in this issue of Science Signaling, Taku, you focused on the role of DGK-zeta in the development of natural regulatory T-cells. What are natural regulatory T-cells? How are they different from other types of regulatory T-cells?
Largely divided, T-cells are composed of either effector T-cells, which carry out effector functions against pathogens, or they could be regulatory when they have suppressive function. So there are many types of T-cells with suppressive function, but specifically when people are talking about regulatory T-cells, they're referring to CD4 positive T-cells that express the lineage-determining transcription factor known as FOXP3, and they display an inhibitory activity against effector T-cell. There are actually two types of regulatory T-cells that express FOXP3. One's natural and the other is called inducible. Natural regulatory T-cells arise in the thymus, so they're born as regulatory T-cells, whereas the inducible regulatory T-cells are born actually as effector T-cells, or conventional T-cells, and they convert in the periphery and adopt a regulatory T-cell phenotype. They start expressing FOXP3. The focus of our study was on the natural regulatory T-cells, which are born in the thymus.
And to just put a little bit of this into context, these cells are extremely important for homeostasis of the immune system. Clearly, one needs to have a very active T-cell response when pathogens are encountered or there are other challenges for the host. Regulatory T-cells are key to dampen that response, and therefore understanding the biology of these cells and the different subsets of these cells has become increasingly important in our understanding the total role of the immune system in response both to challenges but also in quelling that response when the challenges have been met.
Knocking out the enzyme DGK-zeta increases T-cell receptor signaling. And so, Taku, you looked at the development of T-cells in mice that were lacking DGK-zeta. What happens to T-cell development in those mice?
In the absence of DGK-zeta, diacylglycerol levels are increased upon T-cell activation, which leads to the enhancement of other pathways such as ERK, NF-kappa-B, and AKT. So if a DGK-zeta knockout T-cell is activated by the same stimulus compared to a wild-type T-cell, there is more activation. So basically, they're hyperactivatable upon TCR stimulation.
How does DGK-zeta function in regulatory T-cell development?
So T-cell development depends on the TCR. As Gary just mentioned, if a T-cell receives a little bit of signal through its TCR, it's positively selected and it's met with this process, which really is designed to exclude T-cells that are overreactive. So if a T cell gets too much TCR stimulation, it undergoes this process of cell death called negative selection. And the purpose of this is really to exclude T cells that are too self-reactive. However, there is actually an alternative fate to T cells that receive strong TCR signals, and that is to actually become a T cell with suppressive function. And these are natural regulatory T cells. So they start expressing the transcription factor FOXP3, and they enter the periphery, and their job is to now suppress overexuberant immune responses, T cells that have gone awry. So they maintain peripheral T cell homeostasis and peripheral T cell activation. So in this paper, what we hypothesized was that because DGK zeta deficiency would lead to increased TCR signaling, specifically by accumulation by isobutyryl, we thought that perhaps DGK zeta deficient T cells, because of the fact that they receive stronger TCR signals, would have increased proportions of developing regulatory T cells. And that was the point of the study. And indeed, we find that the DGK zeta knockout mice harbor increased numbers of Tregs. And we further identify some of the key signaling components that are necessary for this increase in Tregs. Namely, we find that ERK activation is critical for regulatory T cell development, as well as T-REL nuclear translocation. So diisoglycerol, by activating these two signaling pathways, leads to regulatory T cell development. Therefore, the absence of DGK zeta, where diisoglycerol is elevated, we then see an increase in regulatory T cells in the thymus.
We have actually been studying DGK zeta, and in particular the DGK zeta deficient mouse, for a number of years now. And as Taku just described, we had the expectation that with the lack of DGK zeta, with this augmented T cell receptor signaling, that we would find pretty profound effects in the mouse, both looking at T cell activation in the periphery, but also looking at T cell development. So there are effects on the mouse and the mouse immune system without DGK zeta. T cells are hyperactivatable. Cells respond more vigorously to challenges. And in fact, in experiments that we published a number of years ago, there is an augmented response to a viral challenge where the virus is cleared somewhat faster. Because of that, we actually expected to find a significant impact globally on T cell development. And the reason for that is that T cell development is tightly controlled through activation through the T cell receptor. We were actually very surprised to find that thymic development is grossly normal in DGK deficient cells, suggesting that there are many compensatory events which occur. That made us particularly excited about Taku's paper, where Taku showed that although the global T cell development patterns appear quite normal, if one dissects this at a much finer level, if one looks in particular at these natural regulatory T cells in that particular compartment, there is quite a substantial difference in the wild type versus the DGK zeta deficient mice.
And in a companion paper also published in this issue of Science Signaling, you looked not just at DGK zeta, but also at another DGK called DGK alpha in T cell development. How do those two enzymes cooperate in regulating T cell development? Are they interchangeable? Do they have different activities? Are they context specific? Could you tell me a little bit more about that second study?
In addition to having studied DGK zeta, my laboratory has been very interested in other DGKs which are highly expressed in T cells. We and others have shown that another isoform of diisoglycerol kinase, DGK alpha, is one such highly expressed enzyme. And we were wondering exactly what you were asking about, and that is, what would be the potential role of DGK alpha given the strong phenotype that Taku demonstrated in the natural regulatory T cell compartment in the DGK zeta deficient mice. And we were extremely surprised to find that deletion of DGK alpha, while having an effect on peripheral T cell activation, not that dissimilar from what we see with DGK zeta, had virtually no effect on regulatory T cell development in the thymus. So that really brought up an intriguing question for us. These enzymes, although they have similar enzymatic function, they both metabolize diacylglycerol. They're both highly expressed in T cells, yet one, DGK-zeta, seemed to be predominantly important for the phenotype that Taku described, this augmentation of regulatory T cells in the absence of the enzyme. And that really became the focus of Rohan, my graduate student's work, which really forms the basis of this companion paper.
And so how do the roles of DGK-alpha and DGK-zeta in T-cell development differ?
So as I just mentioned, the striking finding was that the effect on the regulatory T-cell compartment is much more pronounced in the DGK-zeta compared to the DGK-alpha-deficient mouse. And we were very intrigued by this, and there were a number of different possibilities that emerged. One of the simplest possibilities was that perhaps DGK-zeta is expressed at much higher levels than DGK-alpha, and therefore when you remove DGK-zeta, you'll impact the phenotype much greater than removing DGK-alpha. We studied that formally and found that, in fact, that wasn't the case. And furthermore, there's actually more DGK-alpha in the T cells than there is DGK-zeta, so that couldn't be the explanation. Another possibility was that DGK-alpha and DGK-zeta localize differently in the cells. We found that there were subtle differences in localization. However, that didn't seem to be able to explain our phenotype. However, to be perfectly fair, one must do a much finer mapping of localization, as DGK-alpha might subtly localize differently than DGK-zeta, which could impart this phenotype. What we did find, however, was that when we measured the amount of product which is generated, DGK works by metabolizing diacylglycerol to phosphatidic acid. We found a much bigger impact on generation of phosphatidic acid with deletion of DGK-zeta when compared to DGK-alpha. And when we mathematically modeled this, we found that this likely would give us the findings that we observed when we looked at some of the fundamental signaling properties of the DGK-zeta versus DGK-alpha deficient cells in terms of signaling molecules that are hyperactivatable in the mice with the two different genotypes, suggesting that effective catalytic activity, meaning that the ability of the cells to produce phosphatidic acid following generation of diacylglycerol may be the key in the phenotypes that we're observing, and that DGK-zeta is more effective at that in the whole cell context than is DGK-alpha.
Why is it important to have both isoforms in cells?
Well, I'll take a crack at that, and then maybe Taku's got ideas, because we don't really know the answer. We have been studying primarily signaling pathways which seem to be impacted by diacylglycerol kinase zeta. However, we do know that diacylglycerol kinase alpha is important. Given its high level of expression, we are quite convinced, and in fact say that expression of DGK-alpha is regulated so that it goes up in activated T cells. This control of its high level of expression makes us quite certain that there are functions for DGK-alpha that might actually be unique to DGK-alpha, not important for DGK-zeta, that we have just not uncovered quite yet.
So diacylglycerol, just to remind you of what I said earlier, some of the signaling pathways downstream of diacylglycerol are the ones that lead to ERK activation, ones that lead to AKT activation, and then others that lead down to the NF-kappa-B signaling pathway. So what could happen, theoretically, is that the diacylglycerols could be compartmentalized in such a way that you could control diacylglycerol activity on one pathway but not the other. So in part of the manuscript of Joshi et al., in fact, it was shown that DGK-alpha deficient T cells have increased NF-kappa-B pathway activation just like DGK-zeta knockout T cells did. But what was defective was the ERK activation. So DGK-alpha contributed more to NF-kappa-B signaling pathway than the ERK, whereas DGK-zeta was effective at both pathways. So there could be differential regulation of the downstream pathways that are initiated by diacylglycerol, and depending on what those signals are, it might determine the fate that the T cell takes.
Thanks, Taku and Gary, for speaking with me.
Well, thank you very much for taking the time to speak with us.
Thank you very much.
That was Gary Koretsky and Taku Kumbayashi discussing two papers published in the November 26th issue of Science Signaling. Those papers are by Joshi and colleagues and Schmidt and colleagues, and you can read those online at stke.sciencemag.org. The Science Signaling Podcast is a production of Science Signaling and the American Association for the Advancement of Science, advancing science, serving society. If you have any questions or suggestions, you can write to us at sciencesignalingeditors@aaas.org. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and on behalf of Science Signaling and AAAS, thanks for listening.